You know, I can't imagine retiring. In the first place, I don't have any money. Second place, I just don't know what I'd do with myself. This is what I do with my life. I make music. That's what they built me to do. I don't think there's any reason I would stop.
93X presents the Celebration Rock Podcast with Stephen Hayden.
This is the Celebration Rock Podcast presented by 93X FM here in Minneapolis. I'm your host, Stephen Hayden. We have a big show today. I'm very excited about it. We have two guests and sort of at opposite ends of the spectrum as far as like music experience goes. My first guest is David Crosby, legendary rocker, legendary survivor. From Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, and of course his own solo records, like If You Could Only Remember My Name, If I Could Only Remember My Name, If I Could Only Remember That Album Title. Anyway, If I Could Only Remember My Name, that is the name of the record from 1971, one of the classic Laurel Canyon records from that time. I am a big fan of Crosby from across the spectrum of his career, so it was a lot of fun talking with him. It's interesting because he's not a guy that likes to talk about his past, and I think you will find that in this podcast. I was sort of opening the door to talk about his rock star stories, you know, because this was a guy, if you don't know, in the middle of the 80s, this guy basically bottomed out. I mean, he was in jail, you know, for drugs, and like it appeared as if the die was cast, that he was not going to survive. And yet here we are 30 years later, and Crosby not only has survived, but he's in the middle of sort of a late career renaissance. In 2014, he put out a record called Cross, which is a really good record. And he's followed it up this year. In October, he's going to be putting out a record called Lighthouse, which is a very stripped-down record, largely acoustic, and it's a beautiful record. And then he has another record coming out next year called Home Free, which is going to be more in the style of Cross, which was a full band record. So we talked a lot about that. He's very happy. He's very centered on the present. So we were talking a lot about where he is right now. But he did tell at least one really good story about the Beatles that you're going to want to hang around for a little bit later on in the podcast. But it was an honor talking to David Crosby, so that was great. So that's my first guest. And then my second guest is Lucy Dacus, who's a 21-year-old singer-songwriter from Virginia, who put out her first record earlier this year. And it was an independent release, and it was one of those records that like kind of came out of nowhere. It was called No Burden, and it's one of those where it's kind of hard to describe. There's like a bluesy edge to it. There's sort of like a folky edge to it. And then Lucy Dacus' voice, it's really one of the more incredible voices that you're going to hear. We talk about it in the interview. Like, to me, it sounds like, it sounds like a voice that should be on a 78. You know, it's a very sort of classic sounding voice. Like, it's sort of like a cross between Billie Holiday and like Edith Piaf. And I feel like I'm wildly overselling it with that comparison, but I'm trying to give you a sense of like how classic her voice sounds. It's really beautiful. And her record, No Burden, it's just a great record. It's like one of those records that has like really great music, and then on the fourth or fifth listen, you realize how many funny lines are in each song. So I talked to Lucy about that, about sort of where she's at in the early stages of her career, and then I also talked to Crosby of where he is sort of in the later stages of his career. So we have both extremes in this episode. Let's get started here. The first interview is going to be with David Crosby, and here it is. David, I was really excited to talk to you today. Obviously, you're an iconic figure in rock history, but I'm also excited because you've been on a real roll lately. In 2014, you put out Cross, which was your first solo record in 21 years. And it's a record I really liked a lot, especially that song, The Clearing. One of my favorite songs on that record. And now you have a new record, Lighthouse, coming out in October. And then you have another record coming out after that. And I'm wondering, you know, like when a lot of artists get to this point in their careers where they've, you know, been around for a long time, they've put a lot of music, they usually don't have this sort of second or third win that you've had at this point. And I'm wondering, like, what do you think accounts for this? I mean, you seem to be in a real kind of prolific period as a writer and as a recording artist. What do you think accounts for that?
You laid it out perfectly. And frankly, I've been pretty baffled about it. I agree. Generally, it's not the way things go. And I couldn't be happier about it. Explaining it's a little more difficult. I think, and this sounds kind of corny, I think it might just be as simple as I'm very happy right now in my life. But I'm a little mystified because I've always written, you know, two or three songs in a row and then had a period when I didn't write and then had another little surge after that. And this surge has been long and continuous. Now, I will admit that I do work at it, but even so, it's not the way I expected things to go. I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah, walk me through your process. I mean, is it a matter of feeling, you know, like hearing something in your head and feeling inspired, and that's how you go about creating music, or are you like picking up a guitar or going to the piano every day and trying to work on something? I mean, like, what is your process?
I'm a pick up the guitar every day guy. Yeah. The truth is I can't legislate it into being. I can't, you know, say, okay, I've got to write a song about the Eiffel Tower now. I can't just sort of make it happen. But if the music's going to be stopping by, which is the way I kind of imagine it, I want to have all the doors and windows open and all the brain cells I can manage herded into one room and be paying attention.
I mean, has it always been that way for you? I mean, because, again, it seems like lately in particular, you've been really prolific.
I've been very lazy about it. I never even wrote down most of the songs that people would really know me for. Like, there's no original copy of Wooden Ships or Guinevere or any of that. It's just, I've been very lackadaisical about it until later on in life. And then I started trying to pay attention to it.
Was there a particular turning point for you in that regard? Like, what made you kind of turn that page and be more sort of conscientious about sitting down and working on it every day?
Getting off hard drugs. That'll do it. All of a sudden, you have a lot more time, a lot more attention, a lot more intelligence to bring to the party.
Yeah. Yeah, that reminds me. I've been reading your book, which came out many years ago now, Long Time Gone, your first autobiography. And you write in that book about how, for the first couple decades of your career, that there wasn't a concert or a recording session that you were at that you weren't high during.
Yeah, and that's true.
And when you stopped using drugs, I mean, was that a scary process in a way to, you know, try to be creative without that stuff? Was there a period for you where you weren't sure?
I think you're more creative without it.
Yeah.
I think in my life anyway, it was very destructive to the writing process and the rest of my life as well, but very destructive to writing.
But like, I mean, was there a period for you where in a way you had to relearn how to be on stage sober? Or?
No, that all came very naturally and very easily. It's just a matter of getting over that first hump. And, you know, I did, and I did it a very hard way. But, you know, the result afterwards was that the thing that I love doing the most, the thing that I, you know, feel is my calling, came back totally strong. And now, you know, is operating as well as maybe better than it ever has. And I don't, you know, all I can do is be really grateful, man, trust me.
Yeah. I mean, with, you know, the last couple of days, I've been listening to Lighthouse a lot. And congratulations, by the way, it's a beautiful record.
Thank you, man. And
I've been listening to that record, and I've also been reading that book, Long Time Gone. And, you know, thankfully, that part of your life is in the distant past now. I mean, again, you wrote that book 30 years ago, and you were talking about, you know, your life up until that point. I'm wondering, you know, because, you know, before you were just talking about how happy you are now and how that sort of facilitated a lot of the creativity that you've been having. But do you still... like, how often do you still reflect back, I guess, on those dark days in the mid-80s? I mean, like, I just...
Not at all.
Not at all. So, like, there isn't a time during the day where you're like, man, I was in prison 30 years ago, and now I'm here. I mean, does that ever enter your mind?
I mean, yeah, it probably does, you know, but it's a very rare event. I don't... The truth is, man, and I don't think about the past at all. You know, people may ask me questions about Woodstock and stuff. I haven't thought about Woodstock in 10 years. I don't know why people are obsessed with looking at their past because they can't do anything about it.
Right.
My focus is on what I got to do today, what I got to do tomorrow, what I might be able to do this week, and what I'd like to do this year. And that's really almost entirely what I do think about. It's not that I'm negating the bands I've been in or the records that we've made, all that stuff. I think it was good work. But I don't think about it hardly at all. I'm thrilled with the stuff that I'm doing right now. So that's where my attention and my focus and my excitement is.
Yeah. Let's talk about Lighthouse. Again, this is a record. It's a really great record, and it's interesting because it's much different than Cross. I mean, Cross was obviously a full band record. The Lighthouse is you and Michael Leake from Snarky Puppy working together. It's much spare. To me, it's interesting because there's always been a jazz element to what you do. This record, I think that vibe is stronger on, even though it's not a jazz record. It kind of has that vibe to it. And was that something that
That's the thing that's one of the things that Michael brings to it is he is a jazzer and he is a really good writer. I think I've stumbled into a fantastic writing chemistry with that guy. You know, we wrote three of the best songs on there in the first 3 days.
Which songs were those? Which songs were those?
Things We Do for Love, Us Below, and The City.
Mm.
Three consecutive days.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. That's what I said. he's a really brilliant musician, and I had a really good time. And it is a completely different thing. When James produces, like on Cross or on the next one after this one, which is called Home Free, when James produces, it is a full band thing, and it's a different vibe of how to approach it. Michael really loved my first solo record. And when I was asking him to produce this record for me, he said, you know, I thought, well, I'll get the master craftsman with an enormous toolbox. And I said that to him, and he said, well, you know, I'd really rather make an acoustic guitar and vocal stacks kind of record. And, you know, that's right in my wheelhouse. So I said, yeah, okay, fine. And it did come out that way. We did. He brought a really good engineer, mixing engineer guy named Fabrice Dupont, who actually came out and recorded for us too. And it was very fast and very joyful.
Well, and you mentioned that how, you know, Michael brought that jazz element to the record, but I mean, you've always had that in your music as well, haven't you? I mean, I feel like that kind of there's always been.
That's true.
And, you know, like I think like songs like Deja Vu and certainly a lot of, I think, throughout your solo records, that's always been an important part. I mean, I know you write about that in your book about how you grew up listening to jazz. I think you said you saw John Coltrane in like the early 60s.
That's true.
Can you talk about that influence on your music? I feel like that's something that's maybe a little bit underrated with what you do.
Well, you know, it's a very strong influence. My brother turned me out to jazz in late 50s jazz, Jerry Mulligan, Chet Baker, Dave Brubeck, that era. And it was very good. Jazz was very strong stuff then. And, of course, once you get involved in it at all roads lead to Coltrane and Miles. And it's been a strong influence on me because I love the chords that the jazz keyboard players were able to play. And they're actually why I started retuning the guitar. It's a different tuning, so I could get different inversions of the chord, thicker, denser chords. And it's been a very strong influence on me. I love, you know, complex, intricate, beautiful music. And, you know, I'm not good enough to play in a real jazz band, but I do swipe their chords pretty often.
It seems like it's there also in the way that you sing. I mean, there is sort of like a jazzy quality to that.
Yeah, that's true. I do take liberties. I don't sing anything the same twice, really.
And I mean, do you feel like that's always been there with how you've sang, or has that happened kind of organically over the years? Like, how's that evolved?
No, it's increased over the years, but it's always been there.
And were there any singers in particular that you grew up hearing that were influential in that regard?
Singers, well, not so much. Maybe Elvis, Cheryl, and Louis Armstrong.
Yeah.
I love both of them as singers. But a lot of players. A lot of players.
Yeah.
Strong ones.
Right.
Bill Evans, McCoy Tyner, some of the keyboard players, Bill, you know, that just really strongly influenced me.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I mean, I thought it was interesting that you brought up Michael's name right away when you were talking about this record, because I feel like collaboration has always been a big thing for you throughout your career. I mean, you mentioned your first solo record. I mean, that's almost, there's almost like a communal feeling when you listen to that record.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about that. The way I feel about writing or working communally, writing really is where I think it's an advantage. If you're write with somebody else, you just double the number of colors you have to paint with. And the other person always thinks of something that you didn't. So unless you're like trying to defend turf or establish yourself as a writer and you know, get credits, writing with somebody else is very often a good idea, if there's a chemistry. I haven't found it that many times. There's my son, James. I write with him very easily and very well, I think. There's Michael. I write with him very easily and very well. And I've written a couple of songs now with Becca Stevens, who's an amazing girl singer-songwriter. I wrote a really good one with Michael McDonald the other day, also a nice jazz ballad. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. I think I'm going to continue to do it.
Now, that chemistry you talk about, is that something you feel instantly, or do you have to work at it a little bit?
You have to work at it, but it's a natural thing. If you pick people that you like, whose work you like, it's not that hard. You both, you know, I mean, I'm talking about people for whom this is their life, same as me. So it's not that hard. We know how to do it.
You mentioned with Michael that you had this sort of instantaneous connection, or that you were able to write songs together right away. And you also mentioned that he was like a big fan of your first solo record, If I Can Only Remember My Name. I mean, would you say, I mean, was he, I guess, I mean, were you already thinking that you kind of wanted to make a record in that vein, or was he sort of the driving force with that, as you know, as far
no,
as like, kind of reflecting into that?
My intent with Michael was to use his band as the band and build a big band record. And he was the one who said, no, I want to make an acoustic record with vocal stacks, acoustic guitars, and some bass. And I said, well, that's right squarely in my wheelhouse. I would happily do that.
Yeah. You mentioned how you've worked a bunch with your son, James Raymond, over the years. And, I mean, this is a remarkable story about how you connected with him, because, you know, basically, he was born before you were famous at all. I mean, that was in the early 60s. And then you reconnected with him, was it like 20 or 30 years later after that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how exactly did that come about?
Well, it was a wonderful thing, man. You know, you can't track from the parent down, but you can track from the kid up. And his parents who raised him encouraged him to find out. He had gotten married. He was going to have his first kid. And they said, you know, you should find out who your genetic dad is. So he went and looked, and he didn't believe it. He thought that I couldn't be. And then he found out that it was. And when he found out that I was his dad, he'd already been a musician for 20 years. A really good one.
Yeah.
And so he knew somebody who knew my sponsor in AA, and he got to meet your dad. And the thing that happened, it was so good, man. Normally those meetups don't go so well because everybody brings too much baggage, you know. He brought none, and he gave me a chance to earn my way into his life. And we are very close, and that is a wonderful thing.
I imagine, too, that having music as a common touchstone helped matters a lot as far as reconnecting your personal relationship.
Totally. It's like having two languages that you speak.
Yeah. I mean, again, like when you were working with your son, I mean, was that another instance of like kind of feeling a kinship right away?
Yes.
I mean, do you feel like it's like kind of working with a different version of you, or like how are you guys similar and how are you different?
He's very different than I am. He's not like me, but we have such common ground musically that I kind of know where he's going, and he does definitely know where I'm going. I mean, you know, the proof's in the pudding. We write really well together, and we make really good records together. When I'm done with this Lighthouse one, beginning of next year, James and I've got one almost finished come out. That's called The Home Free.
Yeah.
And it's going to be another full band record, mostly. I think there's one acoustic song on there, one of Joni's. But there's... it's just a great time for me, man, and it is working really well.
Yeah. I mean, were you working on Home Free at the same time as Lighthouse? I mean, how did those... Did they overlap at all?
No. No, we had enough songs to make those two and do some more recording after that. And I'm writing another right now.
Oh, is it... You're working on the record after Home Free?
Yeah, sure. Hopefully, if I'm alive. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, are you thinking in those terms at this point? I mean, like, you know, you talk about how happy you are.
And I am very happy, man, and you never know how much time you get here. So what I do is plan to just keep working. Because I love working. I really do. I love recording. I love making songs. I love what I do. I'm a lucky fucker.
Yeah.
That's basically the deal.
Well, and, you know, and again, I know you said that you don't like, or that you don't think about the past very much, but I think it is worth noting, again, you know, I've been reading your book and rereading it, you know, people talk about Keith Richards, about how amazing it is that he's a survivor, but I feel like you're right up there as far as just the story that you've had, and that you are here at the age of 75, you're about to put out a record, then you have another record you're putting out. And I know you don't reflect on this, but I mean, there must be a part of you that is amazed that you feel as good as you do and that you can be as creative as you are at this point.
Yeah, I am amazed. And I would love to sit down with Keith and talk about it.
Like, what would you say is the secret to survival for you? Like, what's kept you going?
I have no idea, man. I really can't explain it at all. I should be gone along with all those who are gone. And I'm not. I'm just a very lucky guy, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So, again, you have this record, Home Free, coming out next year. And you said it's another full band record. Again, I Lighthouse, I think, is a great record. But I do want to ask you about Cross again. Because, to me, you know, and I'll be honest with you, that record was a surprise for me. Like, I know you've been active. You've been making music, like, with bands, with CPR, with CSN, CSNY. But you hadn't made a solo record for a while. And that record, to me, was just really strong. Like, I really liked it a lot. I think I liked it more than I probably expected when I put it on for the first time. Like, what was that process like for you? I mean, was there something different when you made that record? Do you feel like something opened up for you in a way that's kind of carried you forward onto these other records that you've made?
Yeah, I think it was a joyous release. I had been unhappy with the recording process for CSN for quite a while. So I didn't really want to go to them with a record. I wasn't getting along with Graham, so I wasn't wanting to do a Crosby Nash record. And the freedom that making a solo record gives you to pick, you know, which things to sing and how to sing them is a very wonderful thing. And I've had nothing but a complete blast doing it. It's also, you know, encouraged me to write. When you have a place to put things, then you start creating more things. And it's been you know, I don't want to sound cosmic or corny, but it's been joyous. I've been extremely happy doing it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're very happy. The other thing I wanted to ask you about quick was, you know, you've been very active on Twitter, and you're very interactive with people that follow you, and you answer a lot of questions. And you're much more open, I think, than a lot of other, you know, musicians of your stature, certainly. When did that...
Probably, but I do get in trouble there. You know that, though. Yeah, I did. I got in trouble for saying that Kanye West didn't have any talent at all and was useless and a poser.
Right.
That one got me in a lot of trouble, but not as much as calling Donald Trump a walking intelligence-free zone.
but trouble from whom, though? I mean, you know, if you're going to...
Oh, I get... It just starts up a storm, you know. You get a lot of tweets, but it's fun.
But that doesn't seem to have discouraged you at all, has it? I mean,
Not at all. No, not even a little.
Like, what is it about that? Yeah, because you've taken to the medium.
I like communicating with people. See, that's a thing with me. I love it, and so I can do it safely there, and it's a limited arena. And a lot of it is dumb, but there's a lot that's not. And if you ask me a really intelligent question, I just learned something about you.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like treating them like you, like people, like somebody that I'm talking to. And I keep the answers short so I can do a lot of them. But I like it. It's fun for me. And if they like it, you know, then all the better. Then it's a great thing.
Yeah.
I don't do it the way, you know, Questlove or some of the big guys do it, because I don't use all the hashtag tricks or anything. I just talk to people the same way I'm talking to you. And I have a lot of fun with that, too.
It is interesting, though, because you did say before that, like, you know, people ask you about Woodstock or something, and, like, you're like, well, I don't, you know, think about Woodstock anymore. That's, like, you know, 50 years ago. I mean, is there stuff that people ask that are curious about that mystifies you or that you are, you know, don't really feel like talking about but gets brought up all the time?
No, you know, there's all kinds of questions. Some of them were very bright, and some of them were very funny, and some of them are very insightful. Some of them are compassionate. Some of them are idiots. And some of them are trolls, you know, who are deliberately trying to, you know, get you into an argument with them. It's a game, you know, but there are a lot of quite sincere, really nice people on there.
Yeah.
That's fun to communicate with, and we talk about all the stuff that we're seeing. You know, no lack of subjects of interest, you know.
Right. You know, we were talking a lot about how you've been recording a lot, but you've also, I mean, you seem to be on the road fairly often, maybe not as much.
Well, I love singing live.
Yeah.
Because you get to do it new every night. I like that. I don't like being on the road. Nobody does. The road beats the crap out of you. You know, you're staying in hotels and you're lonely and you're eating crap food and you never get more than 4 hours sleep in a row. And you're beat up and you're tired. And you've got to make it happen anyway. But for the couple hours that you're on stage, oh man, that's really fun. That's a really fun thing to do.
And it sounds like you're going to want to keep doing that as long as you can.
Yeah, I think, you know, I can't imagine retiring. In the first place, I don't have any money. And in the second place, I just don't know what I'd do with myself. This is what I do with my life. I make music. That's what they built me to do.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any reason I would stop, no.
You know,
we can't do it.
Right. Well, that's great. Well, yeah, I know you got to get going here, but I did want to ask you about one more thing. And look, I could read down a list of songs that I want to ask you about, but I think my favorite song that you've written is Laughing from.
Oh, man.
That's like my favorite song of yours. I was wondering if you could just talk about just the creation of that song. I mean, it's such
a really good story.
Yeah.
When we went to England, the Birds, we met the Beatles, and they were extremely nice to us. They were very, very friendly and very nice, really good cats. And I kind of was very taken with George Harris. I thought he was a really wonderful guy, and he invited me over to his house and stuff. And I got to hang out with him some, and I really liked him a lot. And I gave him a record, a Ravi Shankar record. I think that's how it happened. And he told me later I was the one who had turned him onto Indian music, which, of course, had repercussions.
Oh, yeah.
And so then he got turned off to Indian music, got turned on to an India, got turned on to an Indian teacher, a guru, who he was very impressed with. And he told me about it, and I wanted to say to him, well, you know, the guy might be really smart, but take it with all with a grain of salt, because I'm just very skeptical about people telling you they know what's going on. And I didn't have the guts to tell him. So I wrote that song at 10.
And did he get the message?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, David, thank you again, man. It was a pleasure talking with you. And Lighthouse, really good record. Good luck with it. Good luck with the next record and everything beyond that.
I appreciate it very much.
All right, man.
Thanks for the help.
All right, take care. All right, that was David Crosby, one of a kind, very happy guy. We did not talk about his feuds with Graham Nash or Neil Young. Got a very strong vibe that he did not want to go there. He kind of made an allusion to not getting along with Graham Nash. That's about as close as we got. But, you know, he's a happy guy. He wants to focus on what's happy in his life. So he's not talking about the feuds at this point. Now we are going to go to, I guess, the future. We talked to the storied legend, and now we're going to talk to an up-and-coming artist. This is Lucy Dacus. Again, her record is called No Burden. It came out earlier this year as an independent release. It's being re-released by Matador. She's going to be on tour this fall with Car Seat Headrest. So that is definitely one of the great tours to check out this fall if it comes to your town. Otherwise, yeah, Lucy was great. I really like talking with her. She's obviously really sharp. Seems kind of wise beyond her years already. And kind of gives off that feeling of an artist who's very confident and is probably planning on being around for a while. So let's hope she is. I think you'll hope she is after you hear this interview. Here it is. Well, Lucy, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
The podcast. So you're in Nashville right now, right?
Yeah, we're at our friend Colin's house, who actually engineered and mixed and helped produce the record. Coming to Nashville is kind of coming home.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, do you still live in Richmond?
Yeah, all of us in the band still live in Richmond, not looking to leave anytime soon either.
That's cool. Well, are you already, have you been touring a lot lately? I know you're going to be out in a couple weeks with Car Seat Headrest.
Yeah, we've been touring maybe almost nonstop. We're at the tail end of a 5-week tour right now. We also like each other, which is pretty great. and I hear it's a pretty unique feeling for a band to not want to claw each other's eyes out.
Yeah.
But they're all good guys, so it works out.
And has your schedule been like this ever since? I mean, because, you know, the story of No Burden is that you put it out on, and was it independently or was it on a small label?
It's on a small label, Egg Hunt Records in Richmond, and this is kind of the first project that they did that reached past Richmond city limit, or Virginia city limits, or state, whatever. But yeah, they're really great people. Adam Hensroth is the main guy who runs all of that, and he just has really good taste. He's super passionate, and I'm pretty sure they're about to put out so many good records within the next year, because all of my favorite Richmond bands are recording right now.
Yeah.
So I think they're all about to come out in a fell swoop of awesomeness.
I mean, because I'm trying to think, is Will Toledo also from Richmond?
He went to William & Mary, which is Williamsburg, and I think he grew up in Leesburg
okay.
or something. So that's 45 minutes outside of Richmond. But yeah, I haven't gotten to talk to him yet about Richmond, but I'm sure that anyone who goes to William and Mary has been is probably aware of what's going on there.
So your record, you know, it came out in February, and it's about to be re-released on Matador. It's coming out in September. Am I right?
Yeah, so, September 9th.
September 9th. So this podcast will be running around that time.
Okay, cool.
So have you just been touring since February, basically?
Yeah, we actually left for tour like the day after it came out, and I think we've had like just over 1 month off combined since then. Like we had basically the month of May mostly off, and then a couple days in June in the first week of July. And then other than that, like we've been out of town doing shows.
Now, I mean, you know, I've never been in a touring band. So like my knowledge of being in a touring band derives from songs about touring bands, like Turn the Page by Bob Seger and Wanted Dead or Alive by Bon Jovi. And it's always like romanticized, but it also seems weary, you know, like it's like you're a cowboy on the steel horse out in the plains of America. Like, do you like this process of touring? I mean, is it exhausting or is it fun? I mean, what's that been like for you?
It's both. I mean, like, I get the whole, like, cowboy thing. Like, it's a little bit lonesome if you think about it that way. For me, like, it's not so lonesome because I like the people that I'm traveling with. But it is hard to, like, meet anybody. You meet, like, dozens of people every day, but not in a way where, like, you're starting any, like, significant relationships with people. Like, what can you say in, like, a five-minute period at a venue to just a random person in the crowd that makes you become best friends?
Yeah.
I think it's the best job ever. Like, I'm really glad to be doing it. It's weird because, like, you don't really know what it's like until you're actually doing it, so you don't know if it fits your personality or if you're capable of doing it until you're out there. The weird thing is like it, like a bunch of people move away from their hometowns, but they usually move to another town where they replant their roots and meet new people. And kind of what we're doing is we're moving out of our hometowns, but not planting our roots anywhere. Like it's kind of like, I didn't realize that I'd be spending so much less time in Richmond. And I'm still kind of figuring out how to maintain my relationships and, like, maintain my emotional state without being in, I guess, my favorite place with my favorite people.
Yeah. I would think, too, that as a performer, that in the position that you're in, where you're just starting your career, and you have this, you know, in No Burden is your debut record, and it's gotten a lot of great press already, and, of course, you know, it's going to be coming out on Matador, which will help your profile a lot, I'm sure. But to me, looking at it as an outsider, the hardest part for me to understand that would be, you know, to be someone who is sort of unproven, that people don't know who they are, and you have to, not that you're selling yourself necessarily, but to put your songs over for people that might not know the songs, that just seems terrifying to me. You know, is that scary? I mean, do you relish that? Like, what's that been like?
It's been actually pretty cool. Like, We've done a lot of like support slots recently, and basically the whole crowd's, we assume that no one is there to see us and doesn't know anything about our music. But then we'll see people kind of react. Like, I really like watching the crowd. I'm like trying to make eye contact the whole time with anybody who's looking up. And, I don't know, it is always scary to like release something into the world and like leave it up for interpretation, whereas like I would rather everyone just understand what I'm saying instead of be misguided. Like, but I don't know. So far, everyone I've talked to that has, you know, connected with the songs has found something in it that maybe I didn't even realize. Like, I don't know. It's kind of magical to see that happen because it's like it's out of my hands at this point, and
right.
It's hard to not control that, but it's worth it in the end.
What's impressive to me about No Burden is that it is your debut record, but it feels very well-defined, you know, because like a lot of people, like when they first get started, it's really easy to sort of point out the influences and to see where they're derivative. And, you know, certainly you have influences, but you seem to have a really strong personality already, like in terms of who you, I think it comes from your voice. It's a very distinctive voice. And also as a songwriter, you know, you are already coming from a pretty, I think, distinct point of view. I mean, did you put out records before this? I mean, just like self-release stuff, or, I mean, is this like your first record?
This is definitely like the first record, but, Colin Pastor, who I was just saying, we're at his house right now, and Jacob Lizard, who's our guitarist and played guitar on the album. The three of us have been friends for a long time, and we all lived in Richmond, and so to hang out, we would, like, make recordings together. Like, Colin would just, like, set up a mic in his bedroom, and I would bring the songs, and Jacob would bring a guitar, and we'd each kind of do our part, and that's just what we enjoy. And so, yeah, we've, like, made an EP called Girls Back Home that used to be on the Bandcamp, but I took it down recently.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's not correct anymore. I don't play any of those songs. Like, it's definitely more singer-songwriter kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a full band, and we're kind of trying really hard to not be pigeonholed into the genre of singer-songwriter. Like, there's nothing wrong with it, and I am a singer, and I am a songwriter. But I think a lot of people still associate that with, like, oh, Joni Mitchell, or, like, I don't know. That's not, we're kind of a rock band, and those recordings were not. And so I didn't want people to find those and make assumptions about what they were going to see at the show.
Yeah.
They would have been disappointed.
Well, and are you 21?
Yes.
And like that EP, was that recorded? How recently was that recorded?
The EP was when I was 17.
Okay.
And actually the album was recorded when I was 19.
See, it's always interesting to me to talk to artists who are young and are already putting out records, because, like, I think of myself at 19, and there was a huge difference between what I was like at 19 and 21. Like, there's a lot of growth that happens. You know, you said that you recorded No Burden when you were 19.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel distance from this album in a way, just because you've grown up a lot since you made the record?
It's not that I feel distance from it, because we picked songs that I feel pretty good about. None of them are, like, specifically about, you know, like, a hard time that has changed. But what I do feel is that everything new feels closer. Like, I don't feel distance from the old stuff, but I feel closer to what's true with everything new that we write. Like, just imagining how the next album is going to turn out is really exciting. Like, it's a little more unified. Like, the concept is maybe it's, I think that it'll end up being better. Like, it's not that we don't like these songs, but I think we're all really jazzed on the new stuff.
Yeah. I mean, do you think of that, you know, and again, No Burden is the record that's coming out, and that's a great record, and we want to talk about that. But as far as this next one you're doing, I mean, are you thinking of it more in terms of an album than as songs? I mean, because you said it's, like, more unified.
Yeah, definitely, because, I mean, No Burden was like, hey, let's pick your favorite songs from your songbook, like, that were written over the course of 2 years. This next record, all the songs are written probably within a 3 or 4 month period, kind of within the same frame of thought. Yeah, and it's not recorded yet. It's hard to speak about because who knows how it's going to change. But we all have a pretty good feeling that it'll be unified.
So I want to ask you about your background. I mean, you're from Richmond, Virginia. Yeah, you recorded that that first EP that is now removed. It's in the black hole right now. When you were 17, like, how old were you when you first started, you know, playing music and writing songs?
I guess there are different answers to that. Like, when I was a kid, I would do as kids do and just kind of sing and write songs.
Yeah.
But then, like, in middle school, I bought a guitar and I would, like, write songs with my friends as, like, a fun thing to do at sleepovers. And then I guess during high school I started writing things that I thought might be worth sharing. I didn't really start playing out until my senior year. A lot of bands, friends of mine, were just offering for me to open for them in Richmond, and so that's kind of how it started. And I was solo. Like, I didn't have a band before No Burden was made. Like, I'd only played solo. So, like, I came home after recording. I was like, okay, well, stuck. I have to find a band immediately. Playing solo is like, it's just totally not the same. Like I'm about to do some solo shows in the UK, which will be good, and will definitely, I think I'm probably going to be nervous. Like it's nice having everything else up there to maybe distract from me, or like, I don't know what it is, but it makes me a little more anxious now to do solo shows than I used to.
Yeah. I mean, like when you first got started writing songs, I mean, did you envision yourself being part of a band? Or was the initial thing as like, well, I'm going, like, did you ever have like a folky period where you thought, well, I'll just be the person that is by yourself playing songs?
I didn't imagine anything. Like, I didn't have any goals or like, I didn't think this was going to become something. Basically, I was just writing songs because that's what I wanted to do, or what I just was doing, even like with my free time. And it took a really long time to be convinced that this is something that people actually do and you can actually spend your time and like have it be your job. Because I don't know, I was never convinced of that when I was younger. Like, it was never really a dream of mine. I was like trying to make films for a really long time.
Yeah. I mean, like, who were your, role models at that time? Like, who inspired you to get started writing songs? And, you know, did you have, like, people in your mind that you wanted to sort of aspire to be?
No, yeah, that's, like, I get asked that all the time, and I don't have any answer to that because I wasn't aspiring to be a musician. And so,
yeah.
I guess I listen to a lot. Like, I can tell you what artists that I listen to all the time. Yola Tango's one of them, and they're on Matador, so that's really awesome.
Yeah.
It's kind of in their same thread. But like Shaky Graves is somebody that I feel really influenced by because he uses the same alternate tuning that I do. And so just like to learn chord shapes and to kind of explore this tuning, I watched like every video he's ever put out. And then I just listened to like so much Broken Social Scene in high school, and I know that we don't really sound like them. But maybe their song structures, or just the fact that they write in so many different ways, like the way they approach music inspires me.
It's interesting too, listening to your music, because I feel like one of the things that people connect to is your voice. I mean, you have a beautiful voice. It's very distinctive. To me, it almost reminds me of like, it's almost like a pre-rock and roll voice. At least that's what I thought when I initially heard it. Like, it reminded me of like, you know, like a singer that you hear in the 30s or 40s in a way. You know, it had like kind of like a, I don't know, there's something in it that reminded me of that. Like, I almost felt like I should be hearing this like on a Victrola or something, you know, like just your voice. How did that evolve for you? I mean, you said you sang a lot when you were a kid, you know, the way kids sing.
Yeah.
I mean, did you kind of blossom into that voice? I mean, have you always sung that way? I mean, like, what was that like?
Yeah, I guess my mom just encouraged me to sing when I was younger, and I just didn't ever stop. So the way that a person has a speaking voice, like, we don't ask people about how, like, how did you get to speak the way, well, maybe we do. Maybe there are people with really distinctive speaking voices, but that's about the same way that it happened for my singing voice. Like, it's just like how it is. And I like to mimic other voices sometimes, and I'm sure that as I was growing up, I was mimicking other people's voices. My mom is like a musical theater director, and so I like did shows when I was younger, and that's like definitely a certain type of voice, and I never felt really connected to the way people sing in musical theater. Didn't feel like right, or maybe didn't feel genuine to how I sound. So maybe by opposition I realized what I sound like, just like realizing when I was pretending. So the way my voice sounds is just how I've figured out not to pretend.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of people would assume maybe when they hear No Burden that there would be like maybe like blues influences for you at all. But I mean, it doesn't sound like that was necessarily the case. I mean, it sounds like you were listening to indie rock stuff, you know, as you were.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I love blues too. Like Hopkins is someone I listen to a lot. And maybe I would count some Tom Waits as kind of bluesy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It has never been intentional. Like, I I guess there's been a lot that's gone into my taste, just knowing what I like and what I don't like in music. But, yeah, I can't, like, just name people that we've, like, lifted vibes from.
Yeah, right. You know, it's when you were growing up and you were writing these songs, I mean, was there a particular song that you wrote that you said, okay, I can actually do this well? You know, like, was there a moment for you where you're like, okay, I've kind of, like, I've evolved enough where these songs are actually good and people are going to want to hear them?
I don't know if there was, like, a song that did that, but it probably was, like, there was a song that I wrote in high school, and this is way before I was doing shows, but I would show it to my friends, like, whoever hanging out. I used to sometimes bring my guitar to school to kind of, like, hang out and pass it around at lunch, very kind of hippy-dippy thing to do. But there is this one song that I definitely don't play anymore and I don't think is very good, but people knew the words, and to see that other people liked it gave it value to me. And so maybe I made it and I'm not, like, totally thrilled with it, but it's valuable to someone else, and so it's valuable innately.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, I feel like with your songs, I mean, because of your voice, there is sort of like a melancholy in your voice where I think if you sang anything, if you sang Hot in Here by Nelly, it would sound melancholy if you sang it. But like, what's great about your music is that there is that melancholy that's sort of overt in it, but there's also a lot of kind of sly humor in the lyrics. And I mean, I think the first song I heard of yours was I Don't Want to Be Funny Anymore. And there's lots of just sort of little lines in that song that are kind of like, you know, sardonic, you know, it's not hitting you over the head with it. You may have to listen to the song a couple of times before you pick everything out. I mean, did you have any, were there any songwriters that you kind of, you know, grew up listening to that did that sort of thing that you feel like you kind of were influenced by in a way?
Again, like, I can't really place anybody, but I did grow up, like, through my, like, actual childhood, like, pre-high school, listening to, like I said, musical theater, and a lot of Bruce Springsteen. My dad's, like, a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, and also, like, Christian rock. Like, I grew up in a church. And so the thing about all of those types of music is that they're really intently, they all have a purpose. It's like they're all part of a story. And so for musical theater, like, if you don't have, if the song doesn't move the plot forward, then it's supposed to be dead space. And so I guess maybe that mentality has stuck with me, but like a song, if it doesn't move you to a different state of mind, like pick you up where you are and drop you off somewhere else, then it isn't good. It's dead space. So that might be the closest thing to an influence I can think of.
You mentioned Christian rock. Like what Christian rock were you listening? Were you exposed to?
Oh, I don't know. Like Hillsong International type of thing. Like, not a lot. Like post hymns kind of stuff. A lot of like '90s Christian rock.
Like DC Talk.
That too. Yeah, I mean less hip than that even. yeah, just like the things, the generic. Like there are a lot of Christian rock writers that don't even really take credit for their music, like it's through a conglomerate, and so it's like Hillsong is an example where the writers aren't even really credited.
But
is not music I listen to anymore that I would ever want to anyone to listen to, but it's like it serves a purpose, so that's kind of what I was saying.
Yeah, right. I just ask because I was exposed to a lot of that when I was growing up. Like, did you ever hear Carmen?
Carmen?
No, Carmen.
Carmen?
Yeah.
Like the opera?
No, he was a Christian singer guy. He had a song called Addicted to Jesus.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I don't know about that.
Okay, I was hoping we could have like a 20-minute Carmen conversation, but we'll have to table that for some other time.
Yeah, like I'm not even sure. Like if someone... What we realized the other day, like, we eat at Chick-fil-A a lot, and I realized that the Chick-fil-A music is, like, Muzak versions of Christian rock songs, and I'll be, like, just, like, as a guttural response, I'll like know the words, and I don't know what the song is really.
Yeah.
And it's just like ingrained into me somewhere deep and inaccessible.
That's great. I didn't know that about Chick-fil-A, that they did Muzak Christian rock songs.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yep.
So, you know, Pitchfork recently did a story about you, about how, you know, after No Burden came out in February, that there was a ton of interest from record labels that wanted to, you know, work with you and re-release the record. And you ultimately, you know, decided to go with Matador. You know, and you talked about this in the story, but, like, what was that process like? I mean, you know, it's a weird time in the music industry. There's people that, you know, they get signed and then they maybe disappear after getting signed, or there's other people that just totally avoid that and they just put their music on Bandcamp. I mean, was that a difficult process to kind of figure out, like, who you're going to pick and why did you decide to go with Matador?
Yeah, it was a pretty hard... I mean, it's like, you can't complain about being wanted, I guess.
Right.
So, like, it was awesome to have choices, and I'm really lucky that I got to, like, kind of look at everyone and figure out what works best for us. But it was hard because there's not really a way to do it correctly. And like I think I said in that article, artists seem to be like maybe kind of hush-hush about their own processes. Like for some reason, it's not kosher to talk about like your signing like publicly. I don't know if it takes like the mystique out of it. I think that's really dumb, and that's why I'm totally fine talking about it, because I think that if artists like want to help other incoming artists know what they're doing and not be lost or be taken advantage of, like that's all you have to do is just talk about how it worked for you. But yeah, like I had a lot of good advice from like Tyler, our manager, I don't know, you can tell, like if you have good intuition, like you can tell who has similar ideas to you. Or if you don't have an idea yet, maybe before you start talking to labels, like figure out what do I think about like streaming? What do I think about like placements and TV spots? Like what do I think about what an artist deserves or how they should be treated? And just like know how you want to be treated, and then when you meet the person or the label that coincides with that, like do that. Like yeah. There were a lot of red flags along the way, like people who were saying things that I just like wasn't okay with, and like maybe it's just a lack of words, like maybe it just they weren't communicating well, but like I wouldn't want to go with a label that said we just want to help you find your story and get your story out there because the implication is that the music isn't interesting enough on its own.
Right.
Like that's, I think, what that meant. And that's not overtly negative. I mean, someone wanting to help you tell your story, that sounds positive, but what that means for their business means that they want to craft you into something, air quote, interesting.
Right.
And then there were some labels that I just, like, from their roster, like, it didn't seem like they had a very cohesive idea of what they wanted to work on. Like, there were some labels that you could see, like, they had maybe a couple of heavy hitters and then a bunch of smaller bands that you don't really know what they're doing. You can track the progress of certain bands and just like look up how they're doing, and like if there's that much of a disparity, then it could just be the merit of their heavy hitter artists of making good music, and it might not be the capability of the label.
Right.
I don't know. I could go on and on about this specific question.
Well, I mean, you sort of answered my next question, because I mean, it's interesting that people would tell you that, you know, that they want to help tell your story, because like I feel like the danger with an artist like yourself, who, you know, you've gotten a lot of great press already. There's a lot of, you know, good feeling, I think, behind the record. I mean, it was written a lot about when it first came out in February, and there's people talking a lot about it now, and you've been on TV, you know, you've done big TV things already. that, you know, that there is a danger sometimes of like hype getting out of control and like people feeling like there's an artist being rammed down their throat and they get sick of it even before they hear the record, and things can flame out quickly. And it sounds like you're cognizant of that in a way, that you want to make sure that it's not just about this narrative, it's about the record, so you can kind of build on that and yeah, you know, make other records after that.
Yeah. It's been weird when I've been interviewed by people and their first question is like, so how did it feel to be covered in Rolling Stone? Or like, how did it feel to be covered in Time magazine? And it's like, that's what's important. Like, and I wonder sometimes if people have even heard the music or if they're kind of following the hype. And I don't know. I appreciate when people take the time to actually care about what we've made. Obviously, I don't think that's a really unique thought for an artist to have.
Well, no, I mean, but I think it is good, though, to have to know that, because, you know, I talk with bands sometimes, or you'll get emails from bands, and there seems to be this feeling sometimes that if they can just get a review and Pitchfork, then that will make their career and then they'll be set up. And they don't understand that these things are like, they're like whippets, you know, like you feel something for 10 seconds and then it's gone. You know, it's really just about connecting with an audience and building from there. That's like the media stuff comes and goes, and that's pretty fickle. But if you're an artist who can tour and make great records and connect with people, that's what matters.
Yeah. If that's what you're working for, a review and Pitchfork, your heart is in the wrong place, in my opinion. Like, I mean, that's you trying to be a musician. That's you. That's not you trying to make music that you care about. And maybe you do make music you care about also. Like, I don't want to make it so binary as that.
Yeah.
And the whole, there is merit to being covered in a prestigious blog like that, because what it does is it shows the music that you made to so many more people. Like, that is why it's awesome. It's because it's opening up more ears to what you made. Like, even if it was a bad review, like, it would still be in front of people's eyes, so that other people can make their own opinion about if they like it or not. But it's just, I see that happening for a lot of fans too, like, oh, we just need this type of coverage, and I don't know, like, I don't think that that makes sense in terms of longevity. Like, if that's what you want, once you get it, are you going to get bored really easy?
Right. Yeah, totally. Well, Lucy, I think you made a really great record. You're off to a great start, I think. And I just wish you the best of luck moving forward. And I know, again, you're going to be touring with Car Seat Headrest. You're going to be coming here to Minneapolis. So that'll be my first time seeing you live. So I'm excited to do for that to happen.
Yeah, that'll be the first time we play Minneapolis, too.
It's a great rock and roll town. I think you guys will.
That's what I've heard.
You will enjoy it. So thank you so much, Lucy, for talking with me. And good luck with everything.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye.
All right, that was Lucy Dacus. Her record is No Burden. I highly recommend checking it out. I also highly recommend checking out Lighthouse, the new record by David Crosby. That comes out in October. Actually, in the meantime, if you want to go check out Cross, his record from 2014, I suggest you do that. I think it will surprise you. It's a really strong record. And I know you probably don't expect much from a Crosby record in 2014 or 2016, I guess now. But this record delivers, I promise. Again, guys, thank you so much for listening. And, you know, I really appreciate you guys supporting the podcast by listening. And, of course, a lot of you have been talking about us on social media. I know you've been telling your friends about us. And I see a lot of you are posting reviews. And these are all great ways for us to spread the word. So please continue to do that. Encourage your friends to do that. These are all great things that help out the podcast. So thanks again, guys, for listening. And we will talk to you again next week.